And so that should be the evaluator. Do we know enough? And are we seeing enough promise in this thing that's been incubated in our doing cool stuff time that we're willing to invest some of Jim's time to now prioritize it as a project to see if it can become a viable product?
Welcome to 33 Tangents, a weekly podcast featuring a rotating panel of co-hosts that all work together in the same company, but live in different areas of the world. The discussions cover a wide variety of topics from digital analytics to working remotely to current happenings in business and technology. Our regular day-to-day conversations often go off in various directions, and the goal of this podcast is to share our ideas and find new ways to engage with others.
Right, and we're set and we're back. So were those wasabi peas you were eating before we got
started?
I
just totally downed them. Wasabi and soy sauce. They're really good. But at the bottom, you get all this dust of like all the flavoring, and you get, and it just woof, like. And then I also have these ones. These ones are good, but I have to limit, like, the flavor is almost too much.
Oh, the Korean barbecue.
Korean barbecue. They're really good, but it's almost like too flavorful where it's like 10 almonds. I'm like, all right, I can't take any more of that. I have another one.
Did you get the sweats going?
No, it's just like overly flavorful. The one. So these ones give the sweats.
Oh, ghost pepper.
Ghost pepper. And I'm addicted to the Blue Diamond. Like, Blue Diamond has, like, at least at my little grocery store, there's, like, 12 different flavors of almonds, and they're all very addicting. So, like, yeah, I've got stacks of almonds.
Nice.
So this one I really like, because most things that are marketed as, like, you know, extreme heat, ghost pepper, you know, scorpion pepper aren't, right? Like, it's like, yeah, this is marketing gimmick. This is not a gimmick. It is. It tastes like ghost pepper, and it is hot.
My brother, a couple years ago, was telling me about a guy he worked with at the time that crushed his own ghost pepper. Like, he had peppers, dried them out, crushed them, and he's like, you take a whiff of that, you start to tear up.
Yeah, it's those super hots are some hot stuff. I really like the flavor of them, but man, just a little bit. I have a friend in San Diego that grows his own super hots, and last time I was down there, he gave me some, and whoo, hot.
So how we can apply this to our work is do you know there's a scale that measures heat and spiciness?
Yeah, it's the Scoville scale.
Yeah, I couldn't think of the name, but I do know there was a scale. And when I learned that a couple years ago, I'm like, there's actually a scale that measures that. I was somewhat amazed. Like, we will measure anything.
Yeah, yeah. And the challenge with scales is that I think as humans, we have a hard time appreciating the growth in the scale, if that makes sense. So we have the Richter scale with earthquakes, right?
Yes.
And like, we have this hard time, at least I do, and I think most people do, wrapping our head around, I think it's a logarithmic scale, that going from a 3 to a 5 and then going from a 5 to a 7, like, there's no comparison. Like, the increase in magnitude is so much bigger. We just can't appreciate how much bigger it is, because in our mind it's like, well, you know, 3 to 5, that's 2, and then 5 to 7, that's 2. It just doesn't work that way, right? And so I think with the Scoville scale, maybe it's a little bit better to appreciate, because it's such a broad, stretched out scale. So I want to say that like a hot jalapeno is around 10,000 Scoville units, and a ghost pepper is somewhere between 800,000 and 1,000,000 Scoville units.
Say that again.
So a jalapeno averages around 10,000.
Okay.
I think a green pepper is like a 1 or like 100 or something. Mm. A jalapeno on average is 10,000 units. And a ghost pepper ranges somewhere between 800,000 and 1,000,000 units.
Wow.
That's, so you can see the jump in heat there. So
that's impressive.
If you bite into a jalapeno and it's hot, that's 10,000. If you bite into a ghost pepper, that's 1,000,000.
Yeah. So the picture you posted me, posted of me on LinkedIn yesterday was from 12 years ago. And I looped our mutual friend Randy and one other coworker into a spicy sushi challenge when we were out at Summit in Salt Lake. I had seen it on Man vs. Food. And I joke with people that it was the dumbest idea I've ever had. It probably still stands at this point. But there's been so many funny stories that have come from it. And you want to talk about like the jump in scale. So like this sushi chef had like developed like these different levels of pepper to put on the sushi. And it goes up to 10, but you could only do up to 7 that night. And if you passed and you didn't die, you could come back and try the higher ones later. Because, you know, it's like, I'm like, I like spicy food. This is going to be good. Let's give it a try. And so I convinced them to do it. And what you did that night was you had to eat 2 pieces with level 5. Then 2 with level 6, and then 2 with level 6.5. And if you pass that, then you could... That was just the qualifier.
Yeah, yeah.
If you could pass that, then you could go to 7. And we did those first 3, no problem. And then to actually complete the challenge, you had to do 3 rounds of level 7, 2 pieces each. Because you ate 2, make sure it's settled.
Yeah.
And you could do 2 more, make sure it's settled and whatnot. And the one rule is the challenge is over if you walk away from your chair. You could stand up, but you could not walk away.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, we did the first qualifying round. Oh, no problem. Did the level 6, no problem. 6.5, no problem. The jump from 6.5, and I think this is on purpose, was such a jump to level 7.
Mm.
I got down 2 pieces of level 7, and that was it. I had to call it a night. Randy and our coworker did 1 each. And, oh, it burned, and he brought them out with sparklers going. And to this day, the smell of sparklers takes me right back to that night, because that the memories from that night were so intense because it burned. Like, and the thing is spicy food for me, I like spicy food that has taste.
Yeah,
there was no taste. It was just burn.
Yeah, I'm a similar way. I was over at a Nashville hot chicken place the other day, and they're like, how spicy do you like? I'm like, I like it on the border of being, I can't taste it, but if it's just heat for like the stupidity of the pageantry of it having it spicy, but I can't taste the food, I'm not here for an ego flex. I like it spicy to the point that it enhances the food, but if it's just spicy and it tastes like I'm like eating something literally on fire, I'm not interested in doing that.
Yeah, so that was that night, and, you know, I've never done anything like that again, but the stories from that night continue to come back. So not only did I have, you know, Rupin, 2 coworkers with us, our boss was there, and our Adobe account manager was there, and those 2 cheered us on.
Oh, I bet.
And to, you know, for the fun part of today's episode that everyone's going to enjoy, it was the pepper was so intense and there was so much of it. I basically had to deal with it twice because I definitely vomited it up. Like, it did not settle. And you taste the pepper going down, so your mouth is on fire, you're sweating and whatnot, and then later back at the hotel, the same thing all over again when it came back up.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, I'm done with that kind of stuff. It was a one-and-done kind of thing.
The juxtaposition of the 2 pictures is just incredible. You know, you've
got the first one was like, that was the start of it.
I'm so exciting. And then the next one's like, that was a bad idea.
I regret this decision.
Oh, man. And the greatest thing about this, well, there's lots of great things, but the greatest thing for me is that Randy and I had talked about that story for years before I even knew that you were a key part of the story.
Well, I remember when we first talked, it was my icebreaker, and you're like, you were there? I'm like, I was the ringleader. I'm the one who made that night happen.
Oh, good times.
But talking about the Scoville scale, and the idea of we can come up with a measurement for anything. When I think of that, the idea of coming up with a measurement for anything, I think of today's topic, and one of the traps in the digital analytics space is the working on cool stuff just for the sake of doing cool stuff. And we've talked about this theme in a couple different aspects and from a couple different perspectives the last few weeks. And I want to clarify again, there is a place for skunk works. There is a place for that kind of work to say, let's see if there's something here. But there is that next step where that's the only thing you're working on. And yes, working on cool stuff is fun, but where do you have to say, okay, this is enough of this. I need to actually work on stuff that's valuable. And the reason why I think the digital analytics space really gets stuck in this working on cool stuff, for the sake of working on cool stuff is for a lot of us, this is a creative outlet for us.
Yeah.
The idea of coming up with new things to measure, the idea of writing the logic to produce the data for that measurement, there's fun in that. There is enjoyment. But doing cool stuff alone is not good enough. I think that is a fair statement to make. Where is the place for that? But then, in your perspective, where does that need to end and work of value be produced? And maybe that's the wrong way to phrase it.
No, I think it's a very fair question. And honestly, it's something that we wrangle with internally as an agency. And it's something that companies wrangle with as well. Because to your point, I think there's huge value in just doing stuff to do cool stuff. And it's, I'll talk about it from an agency perspective, and then I'll talk about it from being client side perspective. From an agency perspective, doing that cool stuff is really, really important, because if not, then what happens? You get siloed in doing, the same thing over and over again, and then all of a sudden you look up and the landscape has completely changed and you've missed it. Like, you've missed a major turn, you've missed an opportunity. So from a agency perspective, it's really, really critical that you have that time just to do cool stuff. Whatever you want to call it, like skunk works or hacking or whatever, but prioritizing time to do things that are outside of the purview and scope of your day-to-day is so critical just to keep up with a marketplace that is ever changing. And it's something that I recognized early on in different leadership roles at past agencies was I would go back to my leadership team and say, how are we supposed to keep up with the changing marketplace if we're asking our consultants to work 38, 40 hours a week on current scope, technology, client deliverables? How are we ever going to learn about emerging technologies? And the answer was, oh, well, they'll do that in their off time. I'm like, off time, right? So it's one of the things that we've kind of prioritized, and we're not great at it all the time, but it's one of the things that we've prioritized and talked about that we can't have our consultants like 180, 90, 100% of their time on client work, because if they are, then we can't keep up with new trends and emerging technologies and things that our clients are going to be coming to us and asking us about. So again, while we're not perfect at it, we've deliberately, and I've probably gotten on you because I've gotten on every team member saying, wait a minute, why are you telling me you're spending 100% of your time doing client work? Like, I've told you that we have to prioritize some of our time to do cool stuff, non-client work. And the way that I've positioned it internally is that the everyday stuff, like the doing stuff, pays the bills today, but that cool stuff pays the bills tomorrow. And so it's a balance. And the same is true on the client side, that there's a bulk of work that has to get done that is driving the business today. But we also have to have time just to experiment and explore. And again, whatever you want to call that, it's less important. It's having the free time to explore and just work on fun things, because that's what helps prepare us and be ready for tomorrow. Here's the problem. If we're not deliberate in how that time is spent, then on the agency side, all the time goes to doing not cool stuff. Because, you know, that's where the pressure is. That's what pays the bills. On the client side, it's almost the opposite. Most of the time gets spent on doing cool stuff. And let's play around with things and test new tools and solutions. So we both have a problem, but it's on opposite end of the spectrum. In that we're over-indexing on either doing cool stuff or not doing any cool stuff at all. The answer lies somewhere in the middle. And the companies, whether you're an agency or client side, that are the most successful in this have been very deliberate in thinking about the structure, doing the math, and figuring out what is the right allocation of our time to spend on doing fun hacking, just projects that we want to work on, versus the stuff that keeps the lights on and keeps the business moving forward today. And for us, we've kind of said it's like 80-20. For other companies, they have to figure out what that mix is. When I worked client side, we had this thing called Mingle Labs on Fridays. It was, I think, 4 or 5 hours every Friday. And it was primarily for the engineering development team, but other teams kind of got involved in it. And the idea was, I have no idea where my monitor and anything went. Hold on. Did I cut out? Because like everything went blank. Okay.
No, you're still here.
Okay. I don't know why everything like went blank. And so we had, you know, 4 or 5 hours every Friday. So do the math, you know, whatever that is compared to the rest of the work week. And that time was dedicated, no meetings, no project work, no, you could, you know, within reason, and we had kind of even a budget, within reason, it's like, work on projects you want to work on. No rules, just go work on cool stuff. And in general, that kept people engaged and excited. Some people built really fun and cool and innovative things that had nothing to do with our business. But you want to know what happened that was amazing? People actually use that time to hack on projects that they've long been excited about, but were never part of a sprint, never got sprint points, never got, you know, they couldn't work on it. And so it's like, well, I'm going to work on Friday because it's my free time to work on whatever I want. And we had some incredibly value. I can think of two, one that was a fraud detection tool and one that was an interactive game where you were kind of this little ball that existed on these islands and you can, it was an online dating company. So it was like this interactive game where you could interact with other members of the site on this island. And both of those projects came out of this lab time on Fridays. And ended up being incredibly valuable for the company from a revenue perspective. And so I think that that's where we have opportunity, is working on cool stuff is incredibly important. And if you structure it right, it is going to produce insanely valuable results for your company, far beyond what you can imagine. The key is to be deliberate in how that works. Deliberate in prioritizing and setting aside the time, deliberate in how much time can be invested in that, deliberate in kind of the structure and the ground rules for how that works, and then let people go at it. The problem is people don't want to do that hard work. And so if I'm client side, then again, like the default is, well, let's just do all this fun, cool stuff and explore all these technologies. On the agency side, the default is we don't have time to do cool stuff. We have to do client work all the time. And neither one of those is a good strategy.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many good things you mentioned in there. And I like how at the start you talked about the conundrum many people may find, especially if they go back and forth between, say, the client side and an agency side. They're either getting pushed in one direction of you need to make sure that your time is booked up with the valuable stuff or the billable work. So there's nothing, there's no time to be able to kind of do any kind of skunk works or exploring or research or reading or anything like that. But then on the other hand, it's very easy to fall into the trap and you know, especially on the client side, of doing every kind of passion project and whatnot. But like you were talking about the Mingle Labs thing on Fridays, you know, like where have you seen the most success throughout your career when it comes to this kind of stuff, letting people kind of dictate their own pace to do it, or when the company kind of comes in and puts some kind of guardrails in place to say, sure. Hey, we want you to.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, we want you to work on this. We want you to feel like you have the ability to do it. So we're going to put maybe not structure. We're not going to put firm rules around it, but we're going to give you some kind of guidance and even maybe set aside the time in this particular case.
For sure, the latter. I think as employees, we need that structure. It gives us a sense of safety. It gives us a sense of support that we're doing something that is healthy and within kind of the parameters of our job. Where we don't have that, what ends up happening is you have very few people that take advantage of that time. And you would think it's the opposite, but it's not. So when we don't have that proper structure, you have people that are not properly taking advantage of that time. When the company is saying, hey, this is a priority and this is something we've struggled with. So, you know, I should be taking my own advice, where we're not prescriptive in how to structure that time and when. We don't get employees taking proper advantage of that time because there's a fear factor to it. Like, if I'm off just like doing cool stuff, is that reflecting poorly on me or negative on me? I'll kind of take this to an extreme, not in this kind of skunk works aspect, but just in doing non-work stuff that is beneficial. So at Omniture, we had access to all this incredible like recreation stuff. We had foosball tables, we had ping pong tables, we had this incredible LAN room where we had all these connected computers where we could play, you know, different games with a group of people. Hardly anybody in the company used it. They just sat there. It was a nice showpiece. What did you say? Wait, did you have a comment?
Sorry, I didn't realize. I forgot I was on mute. It was interesting that nobody took advantage of it.
Yeah, very, very, very few people took advantage of those things because there was a general fear of, well, if I'm caught in the game room or if I'm caught playing ping pong, then maybe I'm not like a dedicated worker. Maybe I'm not a good worker. And I think had management understood that and kind of looked at the usage of it, and maybe they just wanted it as a showpiece. They didn't really care if people used it. But if they truly wanted people to use it because it's valuable. It's valuable to have downtime. It's valuable to connect with your coworkers in ways that are not just working on a project. Then they should have thought about, okay, how can we create structure and safety around, you know, how this works. You know, give us some guardrails. Give us some guidelines on how we can use the game room, and then more people will use it. And it's the same for these kind of skunk work, hacking, you know, build whatever you want, work on cool stuff things. If we're not given kind of guardrails and some expectations for how to do that, then what we'll find is that most employees won't feel safe to do that, and so they just won't engage in it. And again, I think it's a huge risk because and I'll say this a couple times, I think the biggest takeaway from this episode is the things that you work on today, like the projects that have been prioritized that I work on today, are what makes our company money today. But it's that prioritized free time. It's that discovery. It's that I'm going to read a book. I'm going to learn a new skill. I'm going to work on something cool that I've wanted to work on. That ensures success for the company in the future. Because if we don't prioritize that time, we become static and all of a sudden the marketplace has passed us by and we have to scramble to keep back up. It's, you know, is it Tour de France season? I don't know. But if you've ever watched a bicycle race, you know, you have the marketplace as the peloton and it's moving at this high rate of speed. And if you drop off the back, it doesn't matter how strong or how fast you are, unless you have a lot of help, it is hell, and sometimes you never catch back up to them. They are gone, right? And it's a lot like this in the business world. If you drop out of that peloton, the direction the market is going because, you know, we're all work and no play, we're not keeping an eye on the future, and you drop out, it's almost impossible to catch back up. So this concept of doing cool stuff and hacking and all of this stuff is so incredibly important. But the key is, and I love the question that you asked, without the proper guardrails and structure, it becomes such a risk or feels unsafe to people that they don't do it. Or they go to the extreme and they overdo it.
Yeah. You know, what you say around the work of today pays the bills for today, and that work for tomorrow is what pays the bills for tomorrow. Two questions. How can someone tell the difference between the two? Because I think, again, you can come up with extreme examples of one or the other, but sometimes I think many times there's a gray area between maybe those two descriptors. How can you tell the difference? And then is there a way to say, of those skunk works or cool things, is there a litmus test to know which one to maybe dive into?
Yeah, so I think two really good questions. So to answer your first question, if there is some sort of prioritization, I'm expected to produce some kind of deliverable, there's some sort of due date or timeline associated with it, that's something that I need to do today. So, you know, the idea of prioritization, and this is also in maybe a completely separate conversation, but also another reason why so many teams lack focus and struggle with being efficient is that we don't prioritize anything. So everything is a priority. And so I don't want to go down that path, but to kind of help split those two things apart, if it's been prioritized, if there's a known deliverable, if there's a due date, you know, that's something I'm working on today. That's the core part of my job. To answer your second question around like, well, what things should come out of Skunk Works and be prioritized? So number one, I think it's really important not to have that as a measure of success of these programs, because we shouldn't force people to create something that we're going to then adopt into the business. That's cool if it does, but it should be a result of, not the purpose of doing these things. And I think a lot of times when we put those constraints on it, that everything that we put our investment in this kind of doing cool stuff time has to be something we adopt into the business, kills creativity. It kills our ability to think more broadly and to be creative about what the future looks like. So number one, that shouldn't be a measure of a success of these programs. But there should be something that we can evaluate these things to see if they do have legs. And I think that that's why these programs, kind of in an unstructured way with proper guardrails, is so valuable, is you can let it play out and run out, and you can see, right? It's like, wait, this has potential. You know, is it worth investing our time to take this and now prioritize it? Because what we're doing is we're making an investment, because we're saying taking it out of Skunk Works and putting it into our prioritization, it has a cost to it, right? Because we can't work on all things all the time. And this is a problem that businesses need to think about. If I'm going to take something from Skunk Works or anywhere else and prioritize it and say, now Jim's going to work on it, it's like, okay, great. What is he not going to work on now because of that? Or what is he going to work on less now because of that? Because everything has a cost. And so that should be the evaluator. Do we know enough? And are we seeing enough promise in this thing that's been incubated in our doing cool stuff time, that we're willing to invest some of Jim's time to now prioritize it as a project to see if it can become a viable product?
So you're saying one of the biggest mistakes someone could make, you know, when as an individual trying to prioritize that time, is to look at what the potential outcome could be and saying, I should work on this because I think this is more valuable than that, versus just kind of getting into something and letting it organically happen.
I think so. From my experience, I think so, because when you allow people the freedom to just explore and work on cool things within the guardrails that you set up, you allow them to harness their natural creativity, their natural brilliance. Putting unnecessary constraints on it that it has to create some sort of thing for the business instantly. So again, I'm going to go back to my experience with the Mingle Labs. I think had we put too much constraint that everything they worked on had to have some sort of direct business justification or alignment, I think we miss out on some real creativity and some real things that came out of that time that had very meaningful impact on the business. So it's kind of this, you know, paradox that we don't want them thinking about the impact on the business. And because we do that, it puts them in a better space where they'll be able to use their creativity that actually creates things that has a very meaningful impact on the business. It's, I think the Taoists would say something like, you know, trying to force a project to completion or trying to over sharpen a knife, like ruin something that's almost ripe. You know, when you try to force it into being something, you take something that has a lot of promise and you ruin it. When you would allow it to just kind of take its natural ebbs and flows and allow people to truly kind of just do things that are fun and things that they're passionate about within, again, the guardrails that you set up, you're creating a lab that has the ability to create some incredibly valuable things that you just couldn't think of because you were so, you're, you know, because our day-to-day, that's where our day-to-day is, right? Our day-to-day is so constrained in the here and now. It's when we go into this free time, we should take off those constraints and just be free to explore. And that's where I think our creativity can really shine. And it answers that question that you kind of started the conversation off with. Like, for a lot of us, this time that, or this job that we have is our creative outlet. And so we're looking for ways to be creative. We're just not given the permission. We're not given the laboratory. We're not given the supplies to explore that creativity in a healthy way. And so a lot of times it comes out in a very unhealthy way. I think enlightened organizations and leaders that identify this and say, ooh, like I've got this incredibly talented creative team. I just need to give them a little space and freedom to go explore and they'll create amazing things that I can't even think of right now. You know, that's really what we want to be able to get out of our teams. And the only way to do that is to give them that space so they feel safe that they can explore and be creative.
One of the things I've been thinking about is, and I know there's others that experience it. It's the organizations where you get the mixed message. It's the, you're pushed on billability, you're pushed on utilization rate and whatnot, but then you're told the, yeah, make sure you have time to go out and do this and do that or research or keep up on the industry or come up with new ideas and innovate. And the answer back then is well, then that means I got to work 50 hours a week,
right,
to make that happen. Like there's, and it almost in some cases feels like it's intentional. You've got the lip service that like, yes, we want you working on more than just your day-to-day client work or your day-to-day job. And we want you to be able to feel free to explore, but we're going to handcuff you, you know, so that you can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, for sure that happens. I think there are cases where it's lip service. It's like we're saying the things that we think employees want to hear. But I think in most cases, it's just lack of intent. It's just, you know, I think that the people really do want this to happen, but they lack the intentionality of actually creating, again, those guardrails in the space where it can happen. And so when we don't create that, then that's where the expectations come in of, well, the default is going to be, you know, we have to do this work, and especially in agency life, like, well, I have to bill 38 hours a week, you know, when am I going to have time to do this other stuff? So that intentionality and setting up the right environment for it to happen is so, so critical. If you don't, I mean, again, you're going to have two problems you're going to deal with. You're going to have people either a lack of interest in it because there's a lack of safety, or we're going to have the opposite problem where because we have lack of direction and focus, we're just going to work on cool stuff to work on cool stuff because it's fun, but then we don't actually produce anything of value. So we have problems on both ends of the spectrum, and they're solved with the same solution of being intentional of how we spend our time, prioritizing that time, because both are important, right? We can't just work on cool stuff all the time because then we can't pay the bills today. We can't just work on project work all day today because then we can't pay the bills tomorrow. You know, if we want to have the best of these both worlds, we have to put in the hard work of the intent and set the intentionality of how are we going to prioritize the time. Again, for us, we've thought about 80-20. Is it 70-30 for you? Is it 90-10 for you? I don't know. Like, every business is different, and they have to think about how this applies to their business and do the hard work of putting in place the framework. And if, you know, you got to take the Mingle Labs example, take the Mingle Labs example. Friday afternoons are off limit. Everybody Friday afternoons gets to work on cool stuff. And that's the time.
You always have this habit of answering the questions before I could ask it. Cause I was going to say, like, let's get into.
Well, that's what happens when you're risk. Like at episode 200 and something, you know,
260,
260.
Yeah. I wanted to get into the risks. Cause you know, there's definitely like the obvious risks, and that's kind of what drove this episode of defaulting to the one side of the working on cool stuff, just because you want to work on cool stuff. And the, you know, you can't pay the bills today, or, you know, depending upon how big of an organization you're in, you're seen as superfluous, you're seen as extra, you're seen as nice to have. So the minute economic conditions start to change,
you're a target.
You're one of the first to go, because your organization is seen as not producing anything when things get tough.
Yeah.
What are some of the other risks that you see?
I mean,
that mindset, then we'll get on to the flip side.
Yeah, and that's a huge risk, right? And we've seen that play out through the pandemic. We've seen that play out through whatever the economic recession, non-recession landscape we're in. We've seen that play out in terms of layoffs. But there's also just risk for career growth. And, you know, like if I'm just working on cool stuff to work on cool stuff, but I'm not producing meaningful business impact, that's going to not only harm me, it's going to harm my team. You know, when it comes time, you know, these big companies, they go through this like process of setting budgets, and someone's going through there and saying, well, Jim and his team aren't producing anything. Why are we giving them more budget this year? Which impacts your ability to grow. It impacts your ability to increase your size, like impacts everything. So, you know, if we're just doing cool stuff to do cool stuff, there's huge risks, both in kind of immediacy of downturns in the economy, and then our, you know, long term, our ability to invest in grow in our careers. On the flip side, there's also risk to not doing it to the individual. I mean, we talked about the risks to companies and agencies kind of getting left behind the peloton, getting left as the market shifts, but at an individual level, you risk burnout. You know, the all play and no all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. Or like, you know, if we're using that carrot and stick with our employees to just produce and produce and produce, and we don't even have any downtime to just have a little bit of fun and work on things that excite us, then we run the risk of having employees that are burnt out, that lose, you know, their sense of purpose, that, you know, it's, I'm just doing a job, and then they either quit, or we lose productivity from them, or, you know, they're not bringing their creativity to work anymore. So as an employer, as a leader within an organization, the flip side of not allowing any of that time is a huge risk to the overall kind of happiness level of our team. So again, there's risks on kind of both sides of the equation, and the answer lies somewhere in the middle. If we're just doing cool stuff, the risks are high. If we're just doing work all the time, the risks are high. The solution is somewhere in the middle of how do we find the proper balance between doing the project work that's so critical to move the business forward today with the fun stuff that helps us figure out our solutions for tomorrow. And again, that's the work that every team lead, every business needs to put into it and think, you know, how can we prioritize making this happen, and what's the right split for us, you know? And again, I think I really like the term you use, guardrails. Like, putting in the proper guardrails, expectations is so critically important. Otherwise, if you don't, you're going to run the risk of either people just doing whatever they want, which is not going to produce the results that you want, or in lots of cases, not taking advantage of the opportunity because it doesn't feel safe. I don't know what's expected, so I'm not going to do it. You know, most organizations and most employees tend to operate out of a place of fear, and they just want to know, like, what is expected, you know? Like, and I think about this a lot. I think a lot about restaurants because I'm a foodie and I love food and I love to analyze restaurants. And most people, the reason why most people go to fast food chains and chains in general isn't because they know the result of the food they're going to get or they like that specific food. It's they know the process. If I go to McDonald's to the drive-thru and I know what to expect. I know what the menu is. I know how to order. It's why so many mom and pop small restaurants fail, not because they don't have great food. It's because people are scared because they don't know what's expected of them. And that may sound silly, but I guarantee you it's true. Most people won't go into a new restaurant because they don't, like, how do I order? Do I go and sit down? Do they greet me? Like, do I order from a menu? Is there a line and I walk up? How do I order? It's scary to people, so they don't do it. But restaurants that understand that and set the expectations, like, look, like we're a brand new restaurant. Here's how we operate. When you come here, here's what to expect. They're much better positioned to be successful. And it's the same with businesses as they're trying to balance this time. Employees are going to operate out of a place of fear. And all it takes is a little bit of ground rule setting and saying, hey, we're going to create this Mingle Lab things. And here's how it's going to work. And here's what to expect. And here's how you can operate in that environment. And then people naturally feel more comfortable and say, okay, I'm now willing to go into the restaurant and order because I understand at least a little bit about what is expected in the process that I'm going to go through.
I love when you bring restaurants in as an analogy. It does give such an image. And I think that that's ultimately where this episode is coming to is that, you know, again, the episode title, you know, it is focusing on one side, the working on cool stuff to work on cool stuff. But, you know, obviously there's a flip side, which is just as dangerous. And it seems like the biggest takeaway here is that a team, an individual will default to one or the other without some kind of leadership and guidance and saying, it is okay to have a no meeting Friday so you can do this, this, and this. Or it is okay to not have your calendar booked up because you need time to research the latest in our industry or do these kind of things.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll kind of expand the restaurant analogy one step further just to like burn this into people's minds. So I remember very vividly a business trip to Dusseldorf, Germany. And I think there were three or four of us, and I don't know that any of us had ever been to Germany before. Do you want to take a guess, and you're probably going to be right, at where we went to eat the first day we were in Germany?
Bratwurst.
No. That would have been good.
First place you're going to eat Chinese food?
McDonald's.
Okay.
Why?
You knew what to expect.
We knew what to expect. We knew how to order. We knew we could walk into a McDonald's and get a meal. Now, had there been someone in HR or travel that said, hey, these guys have never been to Germany before. We have an office there. Let's connect them with someone in the office. Let's give them like a printout of here are three restaurants that are near the office and how you can order and what they serve. Like, had we had something like that and felt more comfortable and safe, I guarantee you we would have had a much more amazing experience eating at a German restaurant. But we didn't because we were scared and we didn't know what to expect. So we went to a freaking McDonald's. So
that,
you know,
makes total sense.
Right. Yeah. And so we need to think about that as we're managing our teams. Like, we're sending them off to Germany. They've never been there before. And if we don't give them any kind of support or guardrails or, you know, just help them feel comfortable, then they're going to go eat at McDonald's and have a really weird, crappy experience, you know?
And the reason I said Chinese food is because some of the best Chinese food I ever had, I had when I was in Luxembourg.
Some of the best Italian food I've ever had, I've had in Germany. There was a little, it was underground. It was like in this basement, and it was some Italian expat that had moved to Germany, found they didn't have good pizza. So he's like, I'm going to just start making pizza. Some of the most incredible pizza I've ever had.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But I would never would have found it had like there been someone that had given me a little bit of safety and said, hey, like, you know, otherwise I would have been at McDonald's and Pizza Hut the whole time, and that would have been boring and lame.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, cool. So this episode has flown by.
Yeah.
You know, we definitely covered this topic. It was a fun one, as I kind of guessed it would, and kind of putting a bow on, you know, the theme the last couple of weeks of, you know, really ultimately kind of like prioritizing what you're working on and making sure what you're working
being
on
deliberate about it
value in the short term. Yeah, deliberate and intentional.
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, the theme that came out of it. So one last question before we wrap up, and it's the question we try to ask at the end of every episode. How does everything we've talked about today relate to the concept of sustainable analytics?
So this one should be an easy one, right? Like if we're over-indexing on either of the extremes here, if we're just working on cool stuff to work on cool stuff, we have no vision. We're going to create debt and mountains of things that we can't support. It's an unsustainable model. On the flip side, if all we do is work today and we don't keep an eye on the future, there's no way we can build for sustainability because we're not anticipating where the marketplace, where our business is going to go in the future. So it has to be this middle ground where we're keeping an eye on today, we're being smart about what we're maintaining today, but we're also keeping an eye on the future so we can make adjustments to where the businesses that we're supporting is going. And being on either extreme of just doing cool stuff or just doing the work, either one of those extremes is going to end up in something that is unsustainable. It's only in the middle, that place of balance in the middle where we're properly balancing the work today and aiming for the future, where we're able to create something that is ultimately sustainable.
Yeah, it all comes back to balance, I think. Like,
for
just,
sure.
Just like everything in life, balance and moderation.
For sure. And that's the work of the leader, right? Like, that's the work of the leadership team, is what is the proper balance of time? And it again, it has to be intentional. It has to be deliberate.
Yeah, totally agree. Awesome. Well, let's go ahead and wrap up there for this week. This has been a lot of fun. So let's call it there and we'll catch everybody later.
See ya.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of 33 Tangents. If you enjoyed what you heard, please rate and review the show on your favorite podcast aggregator so others can find us. If you would like to reach us, you can do so by emailing podcast@33sticks.com or on the web at 33tangents.33sticks.com. 33 Tangents is a production of 33 Sticks, an analytics boutique.